Welcome to Serial Sisters, a podcast where my sister and I tell each other true crime stories. I'm Devonna.
And I'm Kristen.
And this week, Kristen has a story for me.
All right. So this is the murder of Mike Malloy. Have you heard of him?
I don't think so. It doesn't sound familiar.
Okay. He's also known as Mike the Durable, or Iron Mike, or the Rasputin of the Bronx.
Okay.
Okay. No? Not familiar?
Mm-mm.
Okay. So, for Christmas, DJ and Dakota got me this book called The Poisoner's Handbook by Deborah Blum. Dude, it was awesome. It's all about how in, like, 1920s New York, the start of, like, toxicology and all that shit, and finding it in people and figuring out how people had been murdered. It was so good. Cool. Yeah. So,
yeah,
that's
I think I've heard of that book.
Okay. I'll lend it to you. Next time I see you, I'll give it to you.
Okay, cool.
It was really good. So that's where I first heard this story. And then I got all the information from that book, from allthat'sinteresting.com, and from an article on the Smithsonian online and Wikipedia.
Cool.
All right. So in July 1932 in the Bronx, and the Great Depression is happening, and prohibition hasn't been repealed yet. So everyone's super broke, and they're all like hanging out in speakeasies, you know, kind of setting the scene. You get it. So, Tony Marino owned a speakeasy, which kept him out of the breadlines, but, like, just barely. His patrons would sometimes pay for their drinks, but a lot of them would just put it on a tab and try to pay for it later and not really get around to it.
Okay. Classic.
So, one night. Yeah, exactly. So, one night, Marino was playing cards in the speakeasy with some of his friends, who were fruit vendor Daniel Kreisberg, funeral home director Francis Pasqua, and Marino's bartender Joseph Red Murphy. And the group was talking about how broke they were and how hard it all was and how it would be nice if one of them had, like, a dissident relative that would kick the bucket and leave them some money.
Okay, yeah, that's a thing people talk about,
So none of them had a relative that would leave them any money, but they figured it wouldn't be that hard to invent one, someone no one would miss. And since there were plenty of people like that in Depression-era New York City, it wasn't that far-fetched.
Okay.
So as they were talking, Mike Malloy happened to be passed out drunk at the bar. So I couldn't find much about Malloy's life prior to all of this started. Wikipedia says that he used to be a firefighter, and the Poisoner's Handbook says that he drifted in and out of unemployment, and that he had worked as a street cleaner and a coffin polisher. He had immigrated to the U.S. from Ireland, and he had no friends or family. He wasn't sure of his date of birth, and people guessed that he was about 60. It seems like he was mostly just like a career alcoholic, you know, the type of dude that worked just long enough to get drunk.
Yeah, but it's, like, nuts to me when people, like, don't know their date of birth.
I mean, back then.
I know, but it's just, like, we think we're about this old. Like, I just can't imagine, like, not knowing.
If you're poor, then you don't really do birthday parties, so you don't just keep track.
And I'm sure, like, this is when, like, people didn't always go to the hospital to have babies and whatever, but, like,
exactly. It's just nuts. You just drop a baby out in the field and call it good. You were born in springtime because we were harvesting or planting.
Oh, God. Ugh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm 29. Sorry.
Over the next couple months, Pasqua took an unnamed accomplice with him to various insurance agencies trying to take out life insurance policies. The accomplice was going by Nicholas Mellory to take out the policies, and I don't know why he was using that name instead of using Mike Malloy, but whatever. So he was using that name, and he said that he worked as a florist. They managed to get three life insurance policies, one with Metropolitan Life and two with Prudential. All three of them had a double indemnity clause, which would pay double in the case of an accidental death.
Ugh, yes, so by 1930,
I know. I don't know why that is a clause. I mean, it makes sense for a real accidental death. Like, if Mike died in a car accident, great. That double indemnity clause would help.
But it just seems like they shouldn't, again, like, they shouldn't tell you that. I don't know. Like, I don't know.
It's just way too open to abuse for murderers.
It totally is.
I know. I know. So by 1933, they were all set to go. So before all of this started, Marino had cut back the amount that he would let Malloy charge to his tab because Malloy wasn't paying it back. and Marino mm-hmm. couldn't afford to just pay for him to drink all the time anymore.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. So he told Malloy that he had changed his mind, and he gave Malloy unlimited credit on his tab. So Malloy was like, oh, great, you and my friends, I'm getting drunk. And he signed all of the insurance policies without asking any questions.
Oh, bud.
So he signed the policies, he agreed to let Pasqua pay the premium, and he named Red Murphy as his brother and beneficiary.
Nice. Some fraud. Yeah. Good.
Mm-hmm. So he was kind of a mess, like alcoholics tend to be, and he was mostly homeless, except when Pasqua would let him sleep in the funeral home. The murder trust, as the papers at the time took to calling them, figured that he would die on his own after less than a week of unlimited booze, so they just started letting him drink. Go for it. Drink as much as you want.
Oh, shit. That's fucked.
Right. However, instead of dying, drinking every night actually seemed to be helping him instead. And he looked like he had actually gained a little bit of weight.
Oh, my God. Okay.
He's just so used to it that once it's unlimited, he's like, sweet, I'm in such good health. I'm a drunk Irishman. So he started looking better.
Turns the corner. That's ridiculous. Okay. His, like, skin's better than ever. Sorry, yeah.
I know. Yeah, exactly.
He's like, I look 20 years younger. Oh, God. Okay.
All right. So the group was getting impatient, so Marino decided that Malloy was too used to the large quantities of liquor and that they should try something else. So Marino tried spiking his drinks with antifreeze, then with turpentine, and then horse liniment with rat poison.
Ah!
None of it worked, and Malloy didn't seem to notice. He just kept drinking night after night.
What the fuck, dude? Okay.
So next they decide they're going to try wood alcohol. So, yeah. For those who don't know, during Prohibition, many bootleggers had tried to take methyl alcohol, which is wood alcohol, and it was intended for industrial purposes, and distill it down into something drinkable. Drinks containing just 4% wood alcohol can cause blindness, and more than 50,000 people had died by 1929 from drinking impure alcohol.
Oh, shit.
So the group figured that giving Malloy just straight wood alcohol would finish him off quickly so that they could get their money.
Oh, my God. Uh-huh.
I know. Dicks. So Murphy bought a few cans of wood alcohol at a nearby paint shop. When Malloy showed up for his drinks, Murphy gave him a few shots of whiskey to get him feeling good, and then he made the switch. Malloy took shot after shot as the gang watched, but all that happened was the normal drunkenness. This continued for a couple of nights, until one night after a couple drinks, he stood up, and then he fell to the floor without any warning. So the group is all standing around watching him as he's laid on the floor, and his breathing's kind of like getting slower and more labored.
Uh-huh.
He took one long, jagged breath, and then he started to snore. He woke up a couple hours later, rubbed his eyes, and asked for another drink.
Oh my God.
Uh-huh.
He's just a tank.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Mike the Durable.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
That's a great name for him.
Uh-huh. Well, for the most part. So, since this plan clearly wasn't working either, they decided to switch tactics again. They knew that Malloy loved seafood, so they decided to try to poison him with it.
Okay.
So they soaked some oysters in more wood alcohol for a few days, and then they gave him to Malloy after he had been drinking. Because you're not supposed to combine oysters and alcohol, apparently.
Okay.
It's a thing. I don't know.
I didn't know that.
I didn't either. So the funeral home director, Pasqua, had said that drinking while eating oysters could cause serious gastric distress because the oysters tend to stay preserved.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. I've never heard of it before this either. Anyways. And whatever it was supposed to do, it didn't work anyways, because Malloy just ate all the oysters, licked his fingers, and burped.
Oh my gosh.
So, next plan. Murphy left out a can of sardines to rot for a few days.
Ew.
So then he made Malloy a sandwich with the rotten sardines. And then just to be sure, he threw in some carpet tacks, broken glass, and some metal shavings from the tin. The sardine tin.
Oh my God, these fucking dudes.
Yeah. So as they're all sitting around watching him eating it, he ate the entire thing, and then he asked for another one.
Oh my
gosh. No problems. Yep, yeah. Tried that one too.
Fuck.
I know.
I wish I had this dude's durability.
I know.
Oh my gosh.
So, back in 1931, Marino had befriended a homeless woman named Maybell Carson, and he had convinced her to take out a life insurance policy on herself, naming him as the beneficiary. One winter night, he had gotten her drunk, took off all of her clothes, doused the sheets and mattress with water, and then pushed the bed under an open window.
Oh!
I know. Fucking dick.
So fucking fucked up. Uh-huh.
So then she died, and the medical examiner listed her death as bronchial pneumonia, and Marino collected the insurance money without incident.
Ugh, okay.
So since that had worked for him last time, they decided to try this with Malloy. They waited until he passed out drunk, they carried him to a park bench, took off his shirt, doused him with a bunch of ice water, and then just left him there overnight.
Oh my, okay.
So the next morning, Malloy was in the basement of the speakeasy when they all got up, asking for a drink and complaining that he had a bit of a chill.
I have a bit of a chill. Okay.
It's kind of cold out. Have you noticed?
I'm just a little chilly, you guys.
Yeah.
Nothing a warm bath can't fix.
Just a little booze. Just, you know, shot of whiskey, warm me up, we'll be good.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Man.
So at this point, the plot to kill Malloy is actually costing them way more than they had anticipated.
Of course it is.
They're having to feed him a shit ton of drinks. They're having to buy wood alcohol to try and kill him. They're having to buy all the food that they're trying to poison him with. Plus the insurance premiums that they're now having to pay to keep the policy active. Because they figured they were just going to kill him and cash in. So they're getting pretty frustrated. So they decide to run Malloy over. And then they bring in another patron of the speakeasy, Hershey Green, into the plot. So they agree to give him $150 to run Malloy over with his cab. So they waited until Malloy passed out, and then they all piled into the cab. Malloy actually came to while Green was trying to run him over. And he managed to jump out of the way of the cab, not once, but twice. Just got out of the way of the cab.
Is he just Superman and, like, nobody knows?
I know. However, on the third time around, Green hit him. And then just to be sure, he backed over him.
Oh.
So they were pretty sure he was dead, but somebody else was walking down the street, so they all scattered and they couldn't really double check.
Okay.
So they waited for news of Malloy's death, but there was nothing in the papers about being someone being ran over.
Uh-huh.
So Murphy, pretending to be Malloy's brother, called all the morgues, but they didn't have him either. About a week later, Malloy walks back into the bar, saying that he sure could use a drink.
I was fucking waiting for it, dude. That's awesome.
He had been in the hospital recovering from being hit. He couldn't remember anything about it, but a policeman had found him crumpled on the sidewalk and taken him to the hospital. He had a fractured skull and some broken bones, but he was okay. He was going to live.
Oh my gosh. I tell you, yeah. It's all about being an alcoholic and just being limp.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right? Like, you're not tense.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, when shit happens to you, it's not as bad.
Yeah, because, yeah, you move around easier and you move with it.
Yeah, like, your body's just, like, all noodly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, man. Mm-hmm. Yeah. See? You just gotta drink more.
Yeah, that's it. Mm-hmm. So they had considered hiring a professional hitman, but they decided that that was too expensive. Then they actually tried to run over another drunk guy to use that guy as the dude for the policy, but then he survived as well, so.
They're just really bad at this.
They're really bad at this. It's partially that Malloy is super durable, but they're really bad at this.
Yeah, like, they're just super not good.
All right.
I might have been like, I should try something else at this point.
Right? Or just, like, give up and quit murdering people.
Yeah, like, redirect my life. Like, I'm not great at this.
Yeah. You would think.
How many times can you fail?
All right. So, towards the end of February, Murphy and Kreisberg rented a room in a nearby boarding house / tenement. I don't really know which one it was.
Okay.
Either way, it wasn't really great. The room only had a bed, and it was lit by gaslight. And back then, the gas that they used was carbon monoxide.
Oh.
Yeah. Not great. On the night of... Yeah, it wasn't something I knew until I read this book either.
Yeah, I did not know that.
So then on the night of February 22nd, Malloy passed out drunk again. Marino, speaking really loudly so that everyone could hear, suggested that Murphy take Malloy home to sleep it off. so Murphy and Kreisberg carried Malloy up to the room that they had rented. They put him in the bed, attached a rubber hose to the gas valve, and put the other end into Malloy's mouth. And then they put a towel over his face to close off his nostrils.
Aww.
And then they turned on the gas.
Ah.
Uh-huh. So despite his ability to survive all the other attempts, Malloy died within 10 minutes.
Yeah, I guess carbon monoxide will do that.
Yeah, straight into the lungs like that?
Yeah, that's brutal.
Yeah, fucked up. So the murder trust found a doctor to sign a death certificate for a cut of the money. And the death certificate said that he had died of either methyl alcohol poisoning, according to the Poisoner's Handbook, or low bar pneumonia, according to the Smithsonian.
Okay.
So I don't know which one.
Oh, man.
So Pasqua, who was the funeral home director, he barely waited for the ink to dry on the death certificate before he got the body in the ground. He let Malloy be buried in a pauper's grave since he had no actual friends or family to pay for the funeral. Metropolitan Life played out their policy on Malloy, and Pasqua actually demanded an extra bit of the money for burial expenses, even though there weren't any expenses if he let the city bury him. He's just being a dickhole. So when they tried to collect on the two other policies from Prudential, the agent asked when he could see the body. When he was told that Malloy had already been buried, he got suspicious and refused to pay out the benefits until they investigated.
Uh-huh.
I know. Good for him. So in May, Malloy's body was exhumed, and badass Alexander Gettler, who's the dude that started all the toxicology shit, one of the guys in the book, so he proved that he had died of carbon monoxide poisoning. So then,
that's crazy.
I know. Stories were starting to circulate around the various speakeasies in New York about the man who wouldn't die. Green also wasn't very quiet about his part, the cab driver, because he had only been given $20 out of the $150 given to him.
Ah.
Which, I mean, granted, he didn't get the job done, so.
Uh-huh.
Do you get full payment? But whatever.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So on May 12th, the Murder Trust and Green were brought before a grand jury, which returned first-degree murder indictments against all of them.
Mm-hmm. Good for that.
Yep. So the doctor who signed the death certificate was indicted as an accessory, and he pled guilty and he agreed to testify against everyone else. So Green, who hadn't had any part in the actual murder of Malloy, accepted an assault charge and agreed to testify in exchange for a 10-year sentence. The murder trust went to trial in the first week of October, and they were found guilty on October 19th, 1933.
Ba-bam.
And they were all sentenced to die in the electric chair at Sing Sing.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Yeah, it's the 30s.
Yeah.
So on June 3rd, 1934, Tony Marino, Frank Pasqua, and Daniel Kreisberg were executed. Red Murphy had won a two-week stay while the courts evaluated his mental state. But then just over a month later, he lost the appeal, and he was executed as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it.
That's
the tale of Mike the Durable Malloy.
That is nuts. I never heard of that, but that is
I know. Crazy. I hadn't either, but it's just crazy.
Like,
I know.
The fucking sandwich thing, dude.
I know.
That's nuts.
I know. So much. He just kept right on going.
Yeah, I'm, like, super curious how, like, he could, like, prove that early on, like, that he died of carbon monoxide poisoning. I mean, early in, like...
It's in the book.
Yeah,
it's
like, in the book. That's nuts.
It goes into how they can prove it. It was so good.
That's so crazy.
It's number one, the bright cherry red color of the lungs after you inhale carbon monoxide.
And then they
explain the test that they did as well to show that the carbon monoxide was in there, which I don't remember because it was... technical, so I don't remember it off the top of my head.
Yeah, like, it's just crazy. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
That dude was so good. Like, fuck you, you're gonna murder me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna keep on living.
He didn't even know, though. He didn't realize anything was going on.
That's just...
my friends are giving me all the booze I want. I'm so happy. This is just like sardine sandwich.
The best. They're my best friends.
Uh-huh.
Oh my gosh.
Uh-huh.
That's nuts.
Yeah, he thought he was just living it up that last little bit right before he died. He thought everyone was so nice to him.
Like, I can't believe he lived after they, like, doused him in ice water. What the fuck is that?
And left him out in the middle of winter in New York City.
Gosh, yeah, like, I'd be dead for sure.
Yeah. Cold as hell.
Mm-hmm. Holy crap.
Oh, no, I've just got a bit of a chill.
just give me a shot of whiskey. I'm good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can email us at serialsisters@outlook.com, and we're on Twitter and Instagram @serialsisters. Thanks for listening. Bye.